Okay, folks, ever feel like just figuring out what an insurance policy even says is hard enough to be its own like bar exam? You get all these like assurances from the agent, right? You're feeling good about being covered. And then you actually try to like glance at the policy itself, all those pages of clauses and exclusions, and you start to wonder, like, is this even what I thought I was buying? That whole question, you know, that gap between the promises and the fine print, that's what we're going to dive into today.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
We're breaking down Darner Motor Sales versus Universal Underwriters Insurance Company.
Big one.
Yeah, an Arizona Supreme Court case, and it actually like really changed how courts look at insurance contracts
Interesting.
by focusing on a pretty simple idea, you know, like what did the person buying the insurance actually reasonably think they were getting?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense when you think about it, right? Because insurance contracts are so different than like other contracts. You know, it's not like you're negotiating back and forth on every little detail. It's like you get this huge stack of papers, and you just kind of have to trust that what the insurance agent is telling you is what's in there.
Right, and you're relying on their expertise, right? You're not an insurance expert.
Exactly.
So Darner really dives into like what happens when what you're told and what's like buried in that fine print, they don't match up.
Huge implications.
Absolutely. So today the big question is like if an insurance agent straight up tells you you're covered, can you hold them to that even if the written policy seems to say something else? So buckle up, we are going to unpack the whole story behind this really important case, the legal arguments, the Supreme Court's decision, and why it still matters so much today for anyone dealing with insurance.
Perfect.
We'll dig into the facts of the case, the legal issues, the reasoning behind the decision, including this thing called a reasonable expectations doctrine. We'll look at the other opinions from the judges, and most importantly, what it all means for you and your own insurance.
Sounds good. Let's jump in. So, first things first, what was actually going on in the Darner case that kind of set off this whole legal battle?
Okay, so Darner Motor Sales, they weren't just selling cars, they also had this leasing business going on,
Yeah.
right? They had two different insurance policies with Universal Underwriters. One was a U-Drive policy specifically for the rental cars.
Okay, so people who are renting cars from them.
Exactly. And that policy had limits of $15,000 per person injured and $30,000 per accident.
Got it.
But then separately, they had this broader umbrella policy, much higher limits, $100,000 per person and $300,000 per
Well,
accident.
that's bigger.
And that was meant to cover Darner's own business operations, right?
Makes sense.
But here's where it gets interesting. And this is where like the human element comes in.
Okay.
So Darner's main contact at Universal was this agent named John Doxey.
Okay.
And Darner claimed that Doxey told them point blank that the higher limits from the umbrella policy, that $100,000, $300,000, that would apply to their rental customers too if something happened.
Oh, wow. So they're thinking like, okay, we're covered up to that higher amount even for the renters.
Yeah, they're feeling pretty secure. And get this, based on what Darksey told them, they even put those higher limits right in their rental agreements with customers.
Wow. So they're really operating under the assumption that they have this extra layer of protection.
Exactly. And then, of course, wouldn't you know it, an accident happens.
Of course.
Someone renting a Darner car gets into an accident, ends up with a $60,000 judgment against them. Universal does step in, but here's the catch. They only pay out that $15,000 limit from the U-Drive policy, the one specifically for rentals.
Oh, so they're saying, nope, the umbrella policy doesn't apply here.
Exactly. They're saying the renters weren't considered insureds under the terms of that umbrella policy.
That's a big problem for Darner.
Oh, huge problem. So the person who was injured, they go after the renter for the rest of the money, and then the renter turns around and sues Darner because, hey, you told me I was covered up to $100,000.
Right there in the rental agreement.
Yep. So now Darner is on the hook potentially for that remaining $45,000, and that's when they decide, okay, we got to sue Universal and their agent, arguing that what Doxey promised them should actually be legally binding.
So that's a classic case of like a communication breakdown, right? What you're told and what's actually in the policy are two totally different things.
Absolutely. So, how did the courts initially react to Darner's argument?
Yeah, what happened at the lower levels?
So, the trial court actually sided with Universal. They gave him what's called summary judgment,
Okay.
meaning they basically said, look, There's no real dispute about the facts here. And based on the written policies, Universal wins as a matter of law.
Okay.
And the Court of Appeals, they upheld that decision.
Really?
Yeah. They basically said Darner should have read and understood their policies. And since the policy wasn't, like, unclear about this point, the written terms win.
Which, you know, that's kind of the classic contract law approach, right? The written contract is king.
Exactly. But the Arizona Supreme Court, they saw something different in this case, something that made them take a different path.
Okay. So what were the big legal questions that the Supreme Court was grappling with?
Yeah, so the core issues boiled down to a couple of key questions. First, can these oral promises from an insurance agent, someone you're trusting and relying on for their expertise, can those promises actually override or change the written terms of the insurance policy?
Right, because normally you would think, no, the written contract is the contract.
Exactly. And the second question was, in situations like this, where there's this huge disconnect between what was promised and what the policy says, can courts use what are called equitable remedies, which are basically legal tools focused on fairness to make sure the outcome is just fair?
Okay, so things like maybe rewriting the contract or preventing the insurance company from going back on their word?
Right, exactly. And the Arizona Supreme Court, their answer to these questions was a resounding yes.
Wow, a big win for Darner.
Yeah, they reversed the lower court's decisions, completely breathed new life into Darner's claims.
Interesting.
Their decision really hinged on this idea of the insured's reasonable expectations when they bought the policy.
Okay, so it's not just about what's written in the policy.
Mm.
It's about what a reasonable person would have understood based on the whole situation.
Precisely. And they said, yeah, you can use those equitable remedies, things like estoppel and reformation, to make things right.
I see.
So let's dig into this whole reasonable expectations doctrine a bit more. What does that actually mean in the world of insurance contracts?
Yeah, break that down for us.
Okay, so the court, they recognize that insurance contracts aren't like your typical business deals where everyone's sitting down negotiating every term.
Right.
They're often what are called adhesion contracts, meaning it's basically take it or leave it. You either agree to the terms as they are or you don't get the insurance.
Like those software agreements nobody reads.
Exactly. And the court's reasoning was that if the insurance company's agent acting on their behalf and with all their knowledge creates these really clear and reasonable expectations in the customer's mind, like Doxy telling Darner that umbrella policy would cover renters at the higher limit.
Right.
Then the courts should actually take those expectations seriously. Okay. They shouldn't let the insurance company hide behind some obscure clause in the fine print that the customer probably didn't read, wouldn't understand, or that completely contradicts what the agent told them.
That makes sense. It's like you're putting more weight on the actual interaction between the agent and the customer.
Yeah, it recognizes that power imbalance. You know, the customer is relying on the agent to know what they're talking about.
Yeah, you're not expected to be an insurance expert yourself.
Right. And the court even said, and this is a pretty powerful statement, they said, unknown terms beyond reasonable expectation aren't part of the contract.
Wow, that's a strong statement.
Right, and this is where those equitable remedies come in.
Okay, how so?
Well, they said that Universal, the insurance company, they might be estopped, basically legally prevented from denying the coverage that their agent specifically promised, even if the written policy technically excluded it.
So even if the policy says one thing, if the agent promised something different, they might be stuck with that promise.
Exactly. And then there's reformation. The court said if Darner could prove that there was a mutual mistake, meaning both Darner and the agent thought the umbrella policy covered renters at that higher limit, but the written policy didn't reflect that.
Oh.
Or if Doxy straight up misrepresented the policy, then the court could actually reform the policy, basically rewrite it to match the real agreement and the insured's reasonable expectations.
So the court's saying we're not just going to blindly follow the written words if it's clear that everyone involved meant something different.
Exactly. And this actually brings up a really important point about contract law in general, something called the parole evidence rule. Have you heard of that?
Well, yeah, that's the rule that says when you have a final written contract,
mm-hmm.
you can't bring in outside evidence like oral promises to contradict what's in writing.
Exactly. So how did the court deal with that in this case? Because it seems like they're doing exactly that right. They're considering what the agent said.
Yeah, that seems like a potential conflict.
So the court acknowledged that the parole evidence rule is important in contract law, but they basically said it shouldn't be applied so rigidly in these specific cases involving standardized insurance contracts and the reasonable expectations doctrine.
Interesting. So they're carving out an exception for insurance contracts.
Yeah, because they said, look, these are often adhesion contracts, remember, where the customer has very little power to negotiate the terms.
Right. It's take it or leave it.
Exactly. So they said courts need to be able to consider those oral promises made by the insurer's agent.
Right.
Otherwise, you could have situations where the insured's reasonable expectations based on what the agent told them are totally ignored just because of some hidden clause in a giant policy document.
That makes sense. You don't want the insurance company to be able to escape responsibility just because of some technicality in the written contract.
Right. They're saying the parole evidence rule shouldn't be a shield for the insurance company to hide behind when their agent has made promises that create reasonable expectations of coverage.
So it's a big departure from just looking at the four corners of the insurance policy.
Absolutely. But this wasn't a unanimous decision by the Supreme Court, you know?
Oh, right. I did read that there were some dissenting opinions. What were the main concerns raised by the judges who disagreed with the majority?
Yeah. So Chief Justice Holohan, he wrote a dissenting opinion, and he raised some important concerns about the potential impact of this decision.
Okay.
His main worry was that if oral promises could override the written terms of policies, it would make those written policies basically irrelevant.
Hmm. I see his point.
Right. He argued that it could create a ton of uncertainty and chaos in contract law if people couldn't rely on the written agreements they made.
Yeah, because then it becomes a lot harder to prove what was actually agreed to.
Exactly. He felt it undermined the whole point of having written contracts in the first place, which is to provide clarity and certainty and to prevent these kinds of disputes from happening.
That's a valid point.
Yeah. But then Justice Cameron, he wrote a concurring opinion aiming to clarify things a bit. He emphasized that the decision wasn't meant to completely throw out the written insurance contract or to reward policyholders for not reading their policies.
Okay, so it's not a free pass.
No. He argued that the majority was just applying basic, well-established contract law principles.
Like what kind of principles?
Well, things like the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing that exists in all contracts.
Okay.
The idea that if a contract is ambiguous, you interpret it against the party who drafted it, which in insurance is usually the insurance company.
I think so.
And the idea that you shouldn't enforce contract terms that are just totally unfair.
Right, they're unconscionable.
Exactly. And he said they were just applying these principles within the specific context of these standardized adhesive insurance contracts where the insured often has very little power to negotiate.
So it's not like any random comment from an insurance agent can suddenly change the whole policy.
Right. The courts would still have to figure out if the insured's expectation was actually reasonable and if the agent's statement should really be given that much weight.
So there's still a need for some kind of framework to apply this reasonable expectations doctrine.
Exactly. And that's where the Arizona Supreme Court, they actually provided some really helpful guidelines.
Yeah.
They created a 5-factor test that courts should use when deciding whether those standard boilerplate terms in an insurance policy should be enforced, especially if they contradict the reasonable expectations created by the insurer or its agent.
Okay, that's helpful. Let's go through those factors.
Okay, so the first question the court should ask is this particular term in the policy like really bizarre or oppressive in its effect?
Okay.
Second, does it basically eliminate or severely limit terms that the parties actually agreed on explicitly?
Okay.
Third, does the term defeat the whole point of the insurance contract?
Right.
Fourth, did the insured actually have a real chance to read and understand that specific term?
And finally,
was the term hidden or buried in the policy documents, making it hard for the average person to even find it?
Wow, that's a really practical and specific set of guidelines. It gives courts something concrete to consider when applying this reasonable expectations doctrine.
Exactly. So if a term in the policy doesn't meet one or more of these criteria, it's less likely that a court will enforce it.
Especially if enforcing it would go against what the insured reasonably expected to get in terms of coverage.
Right. And this has some really important implications for insurance agents specifically, you know?
Oh, how so?
Well, the Donner decision really emphasizes that agents have a professional duty to explain those policies accurately and honestly to their clients.
Okay, that makes sense.
If an agent misleads a client about their coverage, whether they meant to or not, the insurance company could be facing legal trouble.
Like what kind of trouble?
Well, they could be stopped from denying the coverage that was promised, or they could even face negligence claims if the agent's misrepresentation caused the client financial harm.
So it's not just a matter of the written contract anymore. The agent's actions and words really matter.
Exactly. And for law students listening to this, this is why Darner is such an important case to understand. If you're going to be working in any area of law, that involves insurance or contracts.
Absolutely.
It shows how courts are looking at these insurance contracts differently now, recognizing that they're often these take-it-or-leave-it agreements and that people rely heavily on the expertise of the insurance agent.
So it's a potential win for policyholders.
Absolutely. It shifts the focus away from just the strict letter of the policy and starts asking, what did the insured reasonably expect? And did the insurance company or their agent do anything to create that expectation?
It's a big shift from the old days, where every single word in a super long and confusing policy was enforced no matter what.
Exactly. And what's a big takeaway from all this? What advice would you give to someone who's buying or dealing with insurance policies?
Well, after Darner, the advice is pretty simple. Document everything.
Yeah, keep really good records of all your conversations with your agent.
Especially any promises they make about your coverage.
Right, because if those promises don't match what's in your written policy, you now have a much stronger legal argument thanks to Darner.
So courts are willing to look beyond just the written policy and consider what a reasonable person would have expected based on what the agent told them.
Exactly. And this brings up a really interesting question for all of us to think about. You know, how will this shift in perspective change how insurance is negotiated in the future?
Yeah, will we see more clear communication from insurance companies and agents?
Maybe a greater sense of responsibility to make sure agents are representing those policies accurately.
It's a really significant development with potential implications for the whole insurance industry.
Absolutely, a lot to think about.
Definitely.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Darner Motor Sales versus Universal Underwriters.
Really interesting case.
Until next time, stay informed and stay insured.
And read the fine print.
Uh-huh. Yeah, always good advice.